This episode of the Rusty Satellite Show is sponsored by George Barrett, Simonton Realtors. George Barrett is a native Louisvillian with his finger on the pulse of Louisville real estate. Whether you're buying, selling, or investing, call George Barrett with Simonton Realtors to start your journey. Find him online at KentuckyTeamRealtors.com.
Opinions expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the management of Louisville.am and Veritas New Media, a Louisville.am production.
Robbing and shooting and raping and killing, bloody murder, molesting, running airplanes into buildings. Every time I turn around, something else is going wrong. Yeah, tell me, what the hell is going on?
Welcome to the Rusty Satellite Show with your host, Rick Redding. The show airs every week exclusively here on the Louisville.am podcast network. Rick's ready to start ranting and raving about his hometown right now. So here's Rick.
Okay, and this is Rick Redding, host of the Rusty Satellite Show. I've been playing with a new slogan for the show. That's what I've been doing in my idle time this week. And here's what I've come up with. Are you ready? The Rusty Satellite Show. The most interesting people in the Ville. I don't know. Let me know what you think about that. I might get some T-shirts made up that you can, you know, would you buy a T-shirt with that on it and the Rusty Satellite logo? I don't know. I've tried other new things. I've never done that before, so I might produce some T-shirts and, you know, anyway, try to promote this show. And it's going very well. I've had a hectic week, but still managed to get some great interviews this week. The first is with Mike Berry of the... He is the president and CEO of the Kentucky Derby Festival. And my second interview is with Larry Muhammad. And my, you know what I'll say on the show, that my favorite former Courier Journal reporter turned playwright. And that is that's what Larry is doing. You might remember Larry. So I'll from the Courier Journal. So I will talk about that a little bit later. But first, I want to intro Mike Berry. He's known Mike a long time. He's been at the Kentucky Derby Festival a long time. And they called me up and asked me, the Derby Festival staff wanted to sort of promote the fact that it's 25 weeks until the Derby Festival. I think until the Thunder over Louisville, which will be the 25th year of Thunder over Louisville. So there's a lot going on. The Derby Festival is a really important part of our community. They've got a lot going on over there, as you'll hear from the interview with Mike. He also got my attention. You know, we'll talk about this. They did a flash mob, believe it or not, down at the Aegon Center last week, and I will put a link to that on the RustySatelliteShow.com website. It's really a fascinating video. It shows that guys like Mike can't really dance very well. And I'll say that because, you know, I know I would have looked silly too. But they had some people that knew what they were doing, and the flash mob seemed to be pretty successful. It was a very interesting way to call attention to yourself. And there's more in store. So anyway, let's get on with it. Here's me and Mike Berry.
What is Louisville if it's not a food town? Learn where to go and what to eat on Deliciously Louisville with Ashley Eats every other Wednesday on Louisville.am.
All right, and welcome back to the Rusty Satellite Show. This is Rick Redding, and my guest this week is Mike Berry, president and CEO of the Kentucky Derby Festival. And Mike, you have been around here for a long time.
That's right. I've been on staff for about 27 years, CEO for 17 festivals. So I guess my apprenticeship is over, and I ought to know what I'm doing by now.
I tell you, I can't think of anything I've done for 27 years. But I did want to ask, you know, I saw on social media last week proof that guys like us shouldn't dance. I saw the flash mob video that you guys put together here at the Derby Festival. Tell me about that.
Well, fortunately, there's other people on staff and volunteers who are much better than I am at it. But, of course, I had to be a part of it. We decided, you know, it's 25 weeks till festival begins in 2014. There's a long winter in front of us, and people aren't really thinking about Derby Festival in springtime quite yet. But we wanted to try to to get some thoughts out in people's mind, and we decided to do something a little bit different and do a flash mob. This kind of went along with our board chair, David Nett, this year is from the Kroger Company, and Kroger has the rights to a song that was real popular locally here back in the 1980s called Look What We Can Do, Louisville. It was recorded
by... We Can Do. Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, and besides dancing, guys our age didn't sing either. Hazel Miller recorded this thing, and they kind of gave it to us to use. And so we had one of our interns, who happens to be a member of the University of Louisville Ladybirds, who choreographed a little number. So it was festival staff and our agency, Vimark, some of their employees and some of our board members and some other volunteers planned this flash mob for Aegon Plaza last Friday. Wow. And did it. It came off without a hitch. And the whole purpose behind it was not to become the Von Trapp family singers or whatever, but was to put it out there, do it once, put it out there virally and see if it lives, and hopefully in a good way. And we've gotten some real good response to it so far, and some of the traditional media has picked it up, but it's mostly living on social media, and that's how we're kind of pumping things up for the next 25 weeks. Sure. Before festival starts. So there'll be all kinds of promos going on out there.
Okay, well, good. Well, I happen to see it. I'll put a link for my listeners. I'll put a link to it up on the LouisvilleKY.com and RustySatelliteShow.com. But it was downtown on the what is that place called?
Aegon Plaza.
The Aegon Plaza, and it's really kind of cool. I have to tell you, it was pretty interesting, and glad to see you did something like that.
Well, and you know, we've encouraged some people to do it as well. We have an instructional video, believe it or not, that we can share with folks. And we've already had a couple of groups in town to say, hey, I've got a dance team, or I've got a hip-hop group or whatever, and we're going to have them do it. So, we just thought that song back in the 80s was kind of representative with some real growth and some real positive things were happening in the community. That's kind of the way it is in Louisville again right now. And we thought, this is a great way of really kind of celebrating the community and getting ready for a festival.
Well, Mike, I've been around a long time in this community, and I know how excited people get about the Derby Festival in the spring. But, I guess my assumption was, and maybe in years past, that in the fall you guys just goof off or something. There's not really enough to do. But suddenly this year there's all this publicity about 20, being 25 weeks out. What's the genesis of all that?
Well, I wish it would be a slow period, or at least sometimes I wish that. But, this is the time of year when you're raising a lot of the money. Corporate sponsorship makes up 50% of our budget. So we're out there trying to get sponsorship partners through local and regional and national companies. But one of the things that we really wanted to do this year, there are going to be some changes in the Pegasus Pen program, the Mini Marathon Marathon. Our road races that we're doing, they continue to grow. We unveiled a couple of new events last year that'll be back on the schedule, and we've got another one coming out for this year on the schedule. So,
all right, stop. I got to know what's the new one.
Well, I can't tell you what the new event is, but
man, we almost had a scoop on the Rusty Satellite.
Did you ride your bike here?
I did.
Okay.
No, well, I didn't today.
Okay.
Okay. So there's going to be a new event involving biking. Good.
Yeah.
I might actually participate in that one. That's
okay.
Good.
Okay. And then, we've got last year we unveiled Beer Fest, which was a big success. We're going to expand that this year. It's a beer tasting with local craft beers and things like that.
One I can participate in,
very,
for sure.
Very popular. last year we did the Mini Fun Run, and even though it's geared toward kids who, want to get into healthy lifestyles and things like that, you're welcome to run a quarter of a mile or whatever
might be able
if
to
you
make
can
it that
as
far.
Well. That's right. We've, as I said, this is the time of year where you kind of put the kick the tires on the new things that you're going to do and kind of send them out there. So that's the reason that we wanted to raise awareness, not to mention that this is the 25th Thunder over Louisville coming up.
Oh, well.
And so, this is going to be a special Thunder.
All right. So I wanted to ask you, Well, let's talk about 25 weeks till Thunder, and it's 25th Thunder. You're going to tell me what the theme is, I'm sure, right now?
No, I can't do that, but I will tell
probing
you.
Probing reporter.
That's right. We're going to be doing we're going to be doing a lot of each week on social media. We're going to be doing Throwback Thursdays for Throwback Thunder. So you can imagine that the salute to the 25th is going to have something to do with the best of and what people have enjoyed over 25 years. You know, it's just it's amazing to me that it's been 25 years. It seems like kind of it was yesterday when we started Thunder. But if you recall back then, Thunder, the very first year was at Cardinal Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
So 24 of the 25 years it's been on the river. But even when it moved down to the river, there was no air show. But people started getting there earlier and earlier to see the fireworks, and they had to have something to do because they were getting a little mischievous out there. So that's when we brought an air show in. And now the air show is, you know, every bit as important to the day's activities as the big fireworks are that night.
Yeah, it sure is. Now, I thought you'd run out this many years. You're bound to have run out of odd colors for those garish coats that all the festival guys wear, right? Or are they all still brown?
All still brown, and I can assure you, now this is a scoop for you, I can assure you that in 2014, the coats will still be brown.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got at least one more year of material left in the brown coats.
That was maybe the ugliest piece of clothing I've ever seen. But
second only to the teal color ones.
Yeah, they used to have a lot of different colors. I remember that.
Yeah.
So now you wanted to talk about, you've got an event coming up like this weekend, right?
Yeah, we've got a couple of off-season events coming on. This weekend, which would make it the 2nd of November on Saturday, we have Festa Vegas. It is a Monte Carlo party that is a fundraiser for the Derby Festival Foundation. The foundation is the charitable arm of the Derby Festival that helps to raise money for charities in the community. This year we got a new location for it. It's the old 502 Winery that's on South 10th Street in downtown Louisville. You know, what we ask folks to do, tickets are still available. Just call the festival office here, you can still get tickets. And it's also a food raiser for Dare to Care. Okay. So in addition to your ticket, you bring some canned goods. And, you know, you have Texas Hold'em, you have blackjack, roulette, craps, and a money wheel. And you're playing for play money. But, you know, you can take the play money can win you prizes.
Okay. So what's the best prize I can win?
Probably we've got some great gift certificates, some of the Broadway series packages with, you know, dinner and a show. And of course, Horseshoe has donated a package as well. So you can go over, spend the night, eat, and have a big time at the casino. Now, another kind of casino gambling event that's coming up on December 14th, the Derby Festival is having a Ho-Ho Hold'em tournament. We're doing that.
So clever and thinks up all these things.
You know, that's what you pay people
the
big
staff
money for.
Here,
that's
know.
Right. And that's going to be a Texas Hold'em tournament that'll be played at Horseshoe, Southern Indiana. And, you know, we'll have folks in that are bounty players, but you can win real dollars there.
Okay, good.
And help support the Derby Festival as well. So, again, what we're trying to do in the off season is to create not only awareness, but also do a little fundraising raise some money for some charities before we get into the spring and get into the 70 events of the festival.
Okay, and one of the last subjects I want to talk about, you mentioned prizes, and I know it's a big thing. You compete with festivals like yours all over the country, and every year I always read the press release about what you win. I want to congratulate you. I saw you won the best new event for the KDF bow tie this year.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
I have not seen one of those.
Yes,
but, that must be quite.
There's one of them here in the office, but we did the best new merchandise article was the KDF bow tie, and it was made out of that old jacket material, the teal color jackets with the pink horses in them. Yeah, that's what you do with old jackets.
So you're in
you make
recycling.
Ties out of them. That's right. That's right. No, but we were very successful, Rick. We had. 36 total awards that we got. They give them in gold, silver, and bronze. You know, these are made possible by the partnerships that we have.
Sure.
Whether it is, a television broadcast of one of the events, whether it is For instance, LG&E sponsors our Go Green project. So, you know, when we're out there recycling all the things that people leave behind after thunder over Louisville, you know, if it weren't for LG&E, we couldn't do those sort of programs. Sure. So we enter that and we win awards, etc. The Biggie Award that we won was the Grand Pinnacle Award for the best festival programming. And
now, who are you up against in something like that?
Well, let me tell you, the first runner-up or second place was the Indianapolis 500.
Okay.
And third place was the National Cherry Blossom Festival in Washington, D.C. Other folks that are out there, like the Rose Parade, Macy's Parade, a lot of the bowl games, the Fiesta Bowl, et cetera. So there are a lot of festivals and special events that are out there. Those are the U.S. ones. We're also up against a lot in there's a huge emerging festival market in area around the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, Oman, Dubai, and then also in Asia. So we also compete against a lot of the festivals in Korea and Australia and Indonesia.
Wow, that's some heavy competition, I'm sure. We got to wrap this up here, Mike, but any last scoops you want to let me in on about what's going to happen at the festival this year?
Well, I just tell the folks that are out there that are runners, we've got another cutoff date for the mini marathon and marathon on November 1st. The mini marathon and marathon registration fee will go up after that. So, you know, if you think you're going to run 13.1 or 26.2, or you think you might want to, you know, save a little money and register
now. I'd
say
the incentive would be to make to have that much money at risk if you don't make it, right?
Exactly. And then coming in very early January, we'll have a training program for those two races. If you're not ready quite to commit now, it may cost you a little bit more, but you might be physically more ready by then.
All right, great, Mike. Well, thank you for coming on the Rusty Satellite Show. Appreciate you having on. Maybe we'll do it again when it gets a little bit closer.
That sounds great. 25 weeks. It'll be here before we know it.
The Louisville real estate market is hot, and nobody knows it better than George Barrett at Simmons & Realtors. From neighborhood to neighborhood, work with George to buy, sell, or invest in Louisville real estate. He's often considered a premier agent in town and is waiting and ready to solve your real estate problems. Find George Barrett, Simmons & Realtors, online at KentuckyTeamRealtors.com.
Well, that was fun. I was down at, recorded that interview down at the Kentucky Derby Festival offices on 3rd Street. And the folks there were nice enough to let me stay down there, work a little bit, and do some things. Great to talk with Mike. I used to play racquetball with Mike's sister, Marsha, who's a very good player. And anyway, that was fun. Hopefully you'll hear more about the Kentucky Derby Festival on this show as we get closer to 2014. Here we are, the end of October. And one of the things I want to talk about this week, I did a story on Insider Louisville about something that Eric Crawford talked to me about last week, and that was the idea of clout scores. If you go to clout, KLOUT.com, you can enter all your social media information, and the site will give you a score that measures your social media influence. And it's just not a measure of any one thing. It's a very complicated formula. I would liken it to some baseball statistics. I don't know how they figure it out, but it was interesting. I did some research, and I put in the story some of the people and some of the organizations and what their clout scores are. Really about the highest one I found was John Calipari, the University of Kentucky basketball coach, had an 88. It's interesting the way the public responds to different items in social media. Sports seems to be one of the leading causes of people to get motivated to respond to things on social media. Twitter is really big in sports, and I just found a bunch of interesting things. I'll put a link to the story on RustySatelliteShow.com, but one thing I found out was that for people looking for jobs or people in hiring positions, that social media savvy is become a very important thing. And so all that Facebooking and tweeting and Instagram and all those things that you do on social media Well, Clout provides a convenient scorecard to see how well you're doing at reaching people, getting reactions from people, and it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun to see. I compared some of the people in town. Eric, who was on the show last week, had a 67, which is really a very good score. And of course, I know you're sitting on the edge of your seat. When's he going to tell me what his? You know, I signed up for the site and I was like at 40 something, and so I put in all my social media information. Within 2 days, I was up to 55, 57, and somehow dropped back down. So I'm at 55, and a lot of the media people in town are in that ballpark, but a lot of non-media people, interestingly, you know, that have social media accounts, like the mayor, Greg Fisher, was at a, I believe he was in the upper 60s, ahead of Steve Beshear, the governor. And there's a lot of things. And another, finally, a story that Eric Crawford told me was that Kevin Ware, the U of L basketball player, during the midst of his infamous injury and all the outpouring from all over the country and all over the world for him, he was scoring Clout scores in the upper 90s, Obama-level Clout scores. So anyway, you ought to take a look at the story on Insider Louisville or go to cloud.com, see how you do. Let me know if anybody out there has a really high score. That'd be very interesting. I know there are critics of the system, and I heard about them. I heard from critics as I did the story, but anyway, it was an interesting exercise, and I think it made for interesting reading because we all like to read about other people and how they're doing, and it does serve as a measuring stick for who's really making things happen in social media. So it's becoming more important in the job world. One of my son Josh's fraternity brothers, Gabriel Diverge, who you might recognize that name from LouisvilleKY.com. He's written sports there. He has an unusually high Clout score, and I was very impressed that did an interview with him. He talked about how he had his Clout score on his resume. So it can be a factor, and it can be something that's worth paying attention to, worth signing up for. So anyway, that's one thing I did this week. Another thing I did, I went to the Yum Center on Tuesday night for the University of Louisville exhibition against Kentucky Wesleyan. It was a great game. We got I went with my son Josh, and we got our seats upgraded. We got down to the student section, which is great because we're sort of right behind the basket. But you know, you got to be ready for that because you know, if you're in the student section, you do have to stand up the whole game. Which you know, some people like to sit down. You know, we sit down during timeouts. But I tell you, you're going to want to see this basketball team. They were totally dominant, and Kentucky Wesleyan was totally outmatched. But these new players that U of L has are really, really good, and they're something to see, especially the guards. Chris Jones and Terry Rozier and Anton Gill, those three guys look like they can put it up and shoot at will. Russ Smith seems to be improved. The inside player, there's two new inside players, Methang and what's the other new inside player? Agbu, something like that. They're just going to be a strong team. And this was playing without Shane Bohannon, without Luke Hancock, and without Kevin Ware. So it's going to be really interesting. I know UK had a blue-white scrimmage that was public this week, and they look really invincible and really good. They've got a lot of great new players. So I still would argue that we've heard this from UK before, and the chemistry needed and all that, throwing together a bunch of freshmen, no matter how talented, is a risky proposition. And I think you got to see them play together before you go ahead and hand them the national championship, as some people have done, interestingly enough. One other story I thought I'd bring to your attention. I found this sort of fascinating. Imagine, let me throw a list of names at you, and you tell me, think about what they might all have in common. Ben Affleck, Woody Allen, Ted Danson, Danny DeVito, Jerry Seinfeld, and Bryan Cranston, also known as Walter White of Breaking Bad. What do they all have in common? They are on a long list of Hollywood celebrities who have, believe it or not, given money in the Kentucky Senate race to Alison Lunder Grimes, the Democratic challenger to Senator Mitch McConnell. Very interesting that the Hollywood has jumped on the bandwagon, so to speak, for Grimes. You know, I don't know that it means anything. It's just interesting that that group of people with none with ties to Kentucky are pitching in. And I mean, the numbers are like, you know, $5,000 for some of them have contributed to the Grimes campaign. So as we get further into politics, as the year goes on, we'll talk more about that race in particular between McConnell and Grimes. It's going to get messy. It's going to get expensive. And hopefully it'll get kind of interesting. Hopefully you won't just get tired of it and tired of seeing all the ads and not pay attention, because it's a very important race. I would suspect that you know, probably 80% of the population's already made up their mind how they're going to vote, and those guys are going to be battling it out for the middle, for the undecideds, people that haven't already made up their mind. Just my opinion on that. So. So anyway, my second interview this week, I went out to, I met Larry Muhammad through my friend John Gilderblum the other day, and we started talking about his project. And Larry was 25 years at the Courier Journal. He took the buyout a few years ago, and is no longer working at the paper. And he turned, his attention, his new career, I guess his second career, his new career is a form of writing. He's writing plays, and he's not just writing them. He's putting together the actors and putting together the stage performance, doing the publicity, doing all the work. And this latest play, it's his fourth or fifth, I think we'll say in the interview, but is about Henry Bayne. And you know about the Henry Bayne sauce, but the Henry Bayne, the individual, was very famous employee of the Penn Dentist Club downtown. He died in 1928, but I'm really anxious to see the play and learn this history. There's all kinds of history in Louisville that we don't know about, things that we hear about. And so you know about Henry Bayne sauce, so if you stick it out for this interview with Larry Muhammad, you'll learn about Henry Bayne sauce. We also talk a lot about the media and Larry's career in the newspaper business. So here you go. From Old Louisville, here's my interview with Larry Muhammad.
Learn about the movers and shakers in the Louisville business scene with Startup, Conversations with Louisville Entrepreneurs. A new episode every Tuesday at louisville.am.
Larry, welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
Now, I want to get in and talk about some of the great, exciting stuff you're doing right now. But first, you spent, I think you told me, 25 years at the Courier Journal. And boy, you must have seen a lot of changes there. And just tell me a little bit about your life as a reporter there and how that, you know, how much you enjoyed that, or if you did.
Oh yes, I did. I mean, you know, I got there in 1988, out of graduate school. I went to Northwestern, got out of Medill, and they, at the time, you know, the newspaper business was booming. The journalism school had a job placement mm-hmm. service, and they recommended you to different papers, and, you know, you would go to the journalism conferences, and all the papers would be there. And I went around I think I was working for Knight Ritter at one time, but then I came down here. The Courier Journal was one of the top 25 newspapers in the country. They liked my stuff, man. They actually offered me more money than I asked for. And this really? This was a, you know, the
Binghams. Who does that?
Well, this was 1988.
Okay.
This was 1988. The Binghams had just left.
Okay.
But it was still like 250,000, 300,000 circulation paper every day.
Sure.
Wasn't no internet to speak of or anything like that. We had, you know, state bureaus, national bureaus.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we became part of Gannett, you know, it was, you know, what we wrote was distributed to all of the Gannett newspapers. It had 9 newspapers. As time wore on and then the internet set in, not only us, but every newspaper and many daily newspapers closed, trying to, you know, couldn't compete or couldn't make the adjustment to online. And a lot of papers are still going through that. I think the Courier Journal benefited because of the Gannett management, which was something that kind of ran up against the tradition of the newspaper. But then when we got in when we got into competing with the internet and losing readers,
right?
And the new generation, my kids don't even like, you know, they'll read it online and maybe not read it. When we bumped up against that, I think the Gannett management style, I don't think any of the newspapers were sold. A lot of layoffs or discontinued people jobs and stuff like that. But I think that kept us afloat. But at the same time, the way that I was trained to work and the way that a lot of people my age were trained to work, it was just passe, and it wasn't really doable.
Yeah.
You had 2 weeks on a story. Like I used to spend 2 weeks on a story. It was like,
I mean, I remember like
hours.
Maybe in the early 2000s or in the 90s, I was familiar with your work, and it seems like you had a byline every, you know, maybe once or twice a week or something like that. And there's no internet, so, you know, that's all you had to do, right?
Right. Right. It was
what a life.
Yeah, it was good. You know, I did some work when I first got there. I did work in Metro, which was, you know, more demanding time wise. And then I spent like a year or two maybe doing night cops and night, you know, Metro Council meeting and school board and stuff like that. So
actual
it was
reporting.
Kinda, yeah, actual daily reporting. And then they, you know, I guess kicked me upstairs to features, and then they required you to, you know, you take a little bit more time,
yeah,
do more research, do, you know, paint, you know, go out there and paint a picture, and we want it written with some polish.
Right.
So they couldn't really demand, you know, turn this around, and there was no need.
Well, that had been a lot of fun. Tell me some, like, is there a piece that you're most proud of? And I mean, 25 years of journalism, that's a lot of stories. Anything that was really memorable or made a difference for somebody? Oh man, I put you on the spot.
No, this one is kind of controversial, I guess. It was a healthcare issue. I wrote about my prostate.
Oh,
I wrote about my prostate. I was I'm a really fit guy. I mean, I was 44 years old. I could run a mile in 7 minutes. I could bench press 180 pounds.
Yeah.
3 sets of 8. And then I went into a physical, and I just told them that, you know, I had like a slow stream and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't had a prostate exam. And it kind of scared me once I started researching, you know, and it was like black men were more prone to get it and different things like that. And, you know, the different big sports figures were having prostate cancer. But when the way that I wrote that story, it was kind of, I just described the whole, my whole experience going to the doctor and all of this here and being afraid of the exam. And at first the newspaper was, they wrote an editorial denouncing the paper.
Oh, really?
Because they just, I don't know, they thought it was too graphic. And then the ombudsman did. But then the editor who edited the story stuck up for me. People all over town wrote in and said, leave this guy alone. And then it saved the man's life. The librarian at the time.
Well, that's what it's all about.
Told me, yeah, a friend of hers, her husband, were having the symptoms. He read the paper, the story, went and got checked. He actually had cancer, but he caught it early and got treatment.
Well, there you go.
So, that was a big story. Well,
that's great. Mm-hmm. Well, just moving on, and now you, as I understand, took the buyout that the Courier did with a lot of people. How long ago was that?
This was a year and a half ago. Anybody who was 50 years old and had at least 20 years of experience, they offered up to a year's salary, a week's pay for every year or something like that. 2 weeks pay for every year, I forget what it was, and a year's benefits.
Wow.
And I was at an age, I was in my 60s, I had determined that I wasn't going to work any, but maybe two more years until I could go on Social Security. And it was just, it was, but 40 people left in one day.
I want to get past the career. You know, you had a great career there, and and you know, people leave the career and they do, they become, they go into other jobs, they work in government, or they work in other media organizations, or whatever. But you, unique among people I know, the turn your attention to plays and writing writing for the stage.
Marsha Norman.
Okay.
Night Mother was, I don't know if she was on staff, but I think she was a writer for features or something like that. And got into, she, you know, wrote that famous play, Night Mother. She teaches at Juilliard now. And Yeah.
But you, I mean, how did you make that decision? And was that type of writing an easy transition for you? Or is
it, it was harder than I thought it was going to be. long story short, I around 2000, late 90s, I wrote a profile of Frank Stanley, who was the basically the founder of the Louisville Defender, and I was trying to write. I mean, his I worked at the Chicago Defender and had heard about him when I was, because he was one of the big managers of the Chicago Defender. They used to own the Louisville Defender. They owned like about 11 papers around the country.
Right.
It was the first day of the newspaper I worked for. And then I was going to write a bio of him because his wife was here and he was such a, you know, he knew everybody and people remember his memory of him was he was such a big leader. And then I just decided to write a solo play with one character. And then I got that stage, and I got so much support from it until, actually, I've been writing plays since then, and that was one of the few I made money on.
Okay, good for you.
But yeah, and then the director, one of the directors had three different directors. It was staged three or four times. It was done one time at Actors and stuff. I got a grant from some, you know what I'm saying? And then one of the directors told me about the... Jimmy Wingfield, about the black jockey thing. I wrote this play about the Jimmy Wingfield, Jockey Jim. We did it at Actors in 2010. And I was kind of in the history plays. I wrote one about Stephen Bishop that was in the National Black Theater Festival in Winston-Salem. I think it was in 2011. But this one I got now, Henry Bain, as part of the New Albany Bicentennial.
I can imagine that writing this, it must be a different kind of thrill for you to, you know, a lot of people try to write plays and never get them produced, but you've had, what, this is this your fourth one that's been actually produced on the stage?
Yes. The fifth one, actually. Because I do some other history plays, I mean, other plays, urban theater kind of plays, some gritty, raw kind of aesthetic plays on Cisco Montgomery. But, you know, I was used to writing narrative, and the thing was, in theater, and I had to go, and I approached it just like I did when I was trying to learn to become a journalist. There's an art form to it that you have to respect. I mean, you have to learn the techniques, the dramatic techniques, the writing of it. I mean, then that made the first stage, because then you got actors and directors, and they bring stuff to it. But what you have to do is, it's all about the dialogue. Not too much stage direction. I mean, you do stage direction, but the director changes that as soon as they get. But the dialogue, you develop the character, the narrative, and all of this through the dialogue.
Yeah,
and I had to learn how to... I had read, though, when I first started doing it, that newspaper reporters had an advantage because we were used to taking live quotes. We were used to listen to people's conversations.
Right.
And, you know, if you've, you know, worked in different regions of the country, you kind of pick up the different, you know, speech patterns and all of this stuff from the different racial groups. I mean, you know,
sure.
you do. So you have all that at your disposal, but you also have to, I mean, I've taken many classes. One play was developed at Sarah Lawrence College, big college in New York City. I got a chance to go to a playwriting intensive program, and I took my play Booty of the Year there. And you know, there were all of these, you know, people there, like Art Gurron, who was just a name people might not recognize, but he founded a theater in off Broadway. Uh-huh. And he was one. It was all of these professors and these professional actors were there,
right,
who worked on it. Was 25 playwrights came to this thing, and you brought your work, and they like acted out, ad lib stuff. You know, you went to classes and all this, but in books, reading a lot of books about how to write plays, mm-hmm, and I gradually, with the help of people like Bill McNulty,
uh-huh,
acting director, acting theater, he was my personal dramaturg for like two or three of the plays, and he read them and told me what to, you know, improvements I had to make.
Well, I don't want to run out of time before I get to talk about your current work, and it may be of interest to a lot of Louisvillians who love Henry Bain sauce, but don't know anything about Henry Bain. So, Larry, I know this play is close to your heart and has a lot of history to it. So, tell me just I don't want to cut you off, but as quickly as you can about this production and how people can go see it.
It's November the 15th through the 17th at Stage on Spring. That's St. Mark's United Church of Christ. There's a theater actually there. Professional theater. They've been doing plays 4 or 5 years. This is at, right on Spring Street across from the Carnegie Center. And I was just lucky to get into that situation. The director is J.R. Stewart. He runs that theater. And I wrote a story about Henry Bain in 07 after I retired from the paper. I bumped into some people, told me this was New Albany's bicentennial, maybe something I might want to get involved in. And I said, perfect, the perfect opportunity to write a play in homage of Henry Bain and New Albany's black community 50 years up from slavery.
And who was Henry Bain?
Henry Bain was, he was the head waiter, dignified, impeccably mannered head waiter of the Penn Dennis Club. He was one of the first employees when it was founded in 1882. He is a friend of Henry Watterson. Anyway, he created this sauce, and then he married. What people don't really know about him is, most don't know, is that he was a Hoosier. He lived in New Albany for about 30 years. He was from Ohio, came here as a young man, started working at the Bedennis Club in 1882, 1899. He was established in the Bedennis Club, and he met this socialite, Daisy Welch, and married, moved over into New Albany, just north of downtown, this big house. And he, the play is about a man who is adjusting, you know, there's tension between his commitment to his work and his commitment to home. He's like a bit, like a lot of guys who are, you know, bit busy man and stuff. And the play turns on, kind of the conflict. His wife is a socialite, and she's having a birthday party to celebrate New Albany's 100th birthday. It's set in 1930.
Well, we got to get off here, but tell me real quick, how did he come up with the sauce? What's the story of the sauce?
The sauce was something that was initially used. Guys were, when they were hunting back in the day, they would hunt and bring their kills into the Bedennis Club. And the sauce was used to get rid of the gamey taste of it.
Okay.
And then it just developed. People started using it as an actual condiment. They started to put it in stews. And so people put it on ice cream.
Wow.
I mean, he developed it over time. He tried to patent it, but there were so many ingredients like Worcestershire sauce, which was, you know, 200 years old, whatever it was, ketchup, and different things like that. But he had a lot of his little secret ingredients. And it was just his sauce. It was something that you can only get at the Bedennis Club. Up until, they did not even start selling it until 2009. It was just a big specialty and really famous.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was so hard to get. You had to know somebody at the Bedennis Club.
All right. Well, Larry Muhammad, that's the story of the Henry Bain sauce. I'm glad to see it. I really like to go see that play November 15th, 17th over in New Albany. So I'll put a link to the information about the play on RustySatelliteShow.com so our listeners can hear it. And I just want to thank you for welcoming me into your home in Old Louisville. And we'll look forward to seeing it.
It's exciting, man. I really appreciate you doing this. It really helps us out.
I tell you, when I was down at his house in Old Louisville, we spent I really had a hard time leaving. The interview ran over, and we just started talking about various aspects of his career and his life. It's very fascinating. I tell you, I hope you get a chance to go over and see Larry's play about Henry Bayne in New Albany. And I'll put information about that on RustySatelliteShow.com. Anyway, that's all we have for Rusty Satellite Show number 19. I do want to say that I'd like to thank my sponsors, George Barrett of Seminon Realtors. Also like to mention that thanks to you and listeners all over town, this Louisville.am network has really taken off. We've got. I encourage you to go to Louisville.am and take a look at the shows. There's shows on U of L. There's shows on U of K Sports. There's a Family Fun Show. There's a show about beer. There's all kinds of interesting local angles that you can discover and listen to on your phone, in your spare time, just like you would the radio. Because the slogan around here, of course, is reject your radio and listen to the podcast on Louisville.am. So this is, of course, Rusty Satellite Show, home of the most interesting people in the Ville. We will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Rusty Satellite Podcast with your host, Rick Redding. Next week, Rick will be right back here on Louisville.am with another stellar lineup of great guests. You can let Rick know what you think by sending an email to rick@louisvilleky.com. He's on Twitter, too, @RickyRedding. For more information about the show, including photos of Rusty Satellite Show guests, go to louisvilleky.com, the pulse of the city.